Laird Krieger and Bunny Henderson, Cesar Romero, get married in the Altered Ego episode of Punter's Girls, next on File.
What?
Previews of coming attractions, starring this week. Dear friends, you and us. The only thing between you and us is all of this equipment. And someday all of this equipment will be the same as you and me. And we will be the same as it.
But
in what world, Peter?
Japanese world, man.
Japanese.
Because I was flashing this week on the fact that, like, 10 years ago, your television set, your old Stromberg Carlson Plasto Giant, you know, you had to have, like, hands as big as a softball in order to turn channels, right? From the two channels you had. And nowadays, since most televisions and everything that's cosmetic is Japanese, they have these tiny little dials for tiny little hands, right? And you can go through 27 channels, right? So the Japanese have changed our entire motor mechanisms of our hands just by taking over the TV industry.
All the doorknobs on the doors will suddenly get lower down, closer to the floor.
And smaller.
And smaller.
Itty-bitty little radios, too. Itty-bitty little earpieces to listen to. Itty-bitty little programs. Everything's gotten real fast and miniaturized, right?
Do you remember how big the radios used to be? So big that in order, like, you'd hear someone's like, Charles, could you come over tomorrow and help me move the radio into the living room?
Yeah, it was a real member of the family.
Yeah, right.
I have a picture of myself, which I showed you guys, standing in front of the big family radio, and it used to light up with that big warm light, just like the big warm lights on the vacuum cleaners when you were a kid. Remember those?
Right.
The Hoover with the big warm light.
Just like the big warm light on your surrogate mother.
Yes, right.
You got when you took that class in sociology.
I still have my surrogate mother. I keep her under my pillow, sure.
You do.
Keeps me warm at night with that big warm light.
Is that where you get your money? 50 cents a night.
That's right. And new teeth, too.
And new teeth, right.
I read a story about a surrogate mother thing, the thing they really did, where a little monkey, right, if it didn't suck the right teat of the surrogate mother, would get air, compressed air, blown at it. If it sucked the right teat, you know, the left one, which was probably right, then it got milk put in through a tube. Otherwise, it got... And they found out, in fact, at the Hans Werfel Yale University...
Neurophysiological Institute of
feat. That indeed, the little monkey, after being scared to death 5 or 6 or 7 times, did indeed avoid the right teat, like the plague.
What did that prove?
Gee, I don't know, Phil. I got very tired of clinical psychology when indeed I was told that in order to take it, I would have to, like, run rats through a maze and dissect frogs and put electrodes into the heads of dogs and things. I figured, I think I'll take classical sieve or something like
that. That's why you became a barber.
That's right. That's right. It was the only thing open that was, doesn't hurt anybody to cut their hair, right?
No.
No, and I don't leech people anymore, and I don't do any more bloodletting.
It only hurts them if their hair is made out of plastic tubing with fluid going through it, like I've seen some poor people on television have, right?
G.I. Joe has a new head of hair. Have you seen that?
Yeah, it does, but it doesn't grow. I'm waiting for them. Next, they'll put out G.I. Joe with a scar that bleeds and hair that really grows.
No hair grows in this man's army.
That's right. And maybe a little lice in it, too, because that's, of course, why they cut it short, you see, to keep it clean.
Cut with a little lice, anyway.
Yes. Lice over soda.
No, not ice. Yeah.
Lysol and soda?
Lysol and soda.
Oh, that's called a jumping Jenny, where I come from.
Listen, this bar doesn't serve anything but 69-cent bar scotch. That's all you get here.
It's good?
It's terrible.
I tell you something. I took 43 drinks waiting to get on a plane from Burbank to Oxnard yesterday.
Yeah, I've waited down. That's at Interplanetary Airport Central. Yes,
right, Contrapole. Yeah, well, it's as close as possible to where I live, if you want to call that a living.
I understand. 65 drinks, it took.
48, actually.
That was a good year for bar scotch.
I was absolutely destroyed. I got up to 20,000 feet, and I began to see people with weapons in the plane. Well, they were there, of course.
Oh, well.
But you can't see them until you get that.
All right, is everybody here now? I think we can begin. The president has asked us...
President?
...to write...
God bless the president.
All right, Fred, I know we
God
all
God bless the president.
All right. Please, gentlemen. Gentlemen, please. Is this microphone on here, please? The president has asked us to communicate with those countries who are presently growing marijuana and poppies, I know, Jimmy, that you're going to say that the artificial poppies that you give out as part of the veterans program will be affected by this. It is not true. You cannot smoke those.
No, we never.
They are inflammable, as a matter of fact.
We never.
Can you turn his microphone
off? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator.
As we never have we never smoke any of those poppies
right.
at all. They're
right.
they're for medicinal purposes and are to
right.
be swallowed whole,
anyway,
except for the little seeds.
I think we should all get behind this effort and push him over the top and get these countries, these nasty countries, to stop growing the stuff so that we can get a market on it here at home.
I think that Lucky Strike Green is going to hit the streets,
right? Keep the problem in the pockets of the businessmen. That's what I say.
You better believe it, friend.
And let's back the president all the way up there.
I backed him yesterday into the swimming pool, and I nearly lost all of my senatorial privileges. For example, I can't go to the electric wee-wee room anymore.
Yes.
Oh, that's since the French have come, right?
Yes.
Ever since they started speaking German on the first floor, I can't get anything worthwhile to eat except a little beer brat.
Have any of you tried to run the maze on the fifth floor?
No.
I can't. They wouldn't give me a key to the fifth floor.
That's where they keep the secretary.
I live in an office that used to be Ralph Nader's.
Oh, no, really? That is a Nader. that's a pun. Oh, I'm sorry.
All right, gentlemen, I think that's
really
enough
sorry.
For today. Let's all retire into the retirement
of...
room and have a little drinky-drinky.
Yeah.
Both work and living have become more and more pointless and empty. There's no lack of meaningful things that cry out to be done, but our working days are used up in what lacks meaning, making useless or harmful products, or servicing the bureaucratic structures. For most Americans, work is mindless, exhausting, boring, servile, and hateful, something to be endured, while life is confined to time off. Beginning with school, if not before, an individual is systematically stripped of his imagination, his creativity, his heritage, his dreams, and his personal uniqueness in order to fit him to be a productive unit in a mass technological society. Instinct, feeling, and spontaneity are suppressed by overwhelming forces. As the individual is drawn into the meritocracy, his working life is split from his home life, and both suffer from a lack of wholeness. In the end, people virtually become their occupations and their other roles and are strangers to themselves. The American crisis, then, seems clearly to be related to an inability to act. But what is the cause of this paralysis? Why, in the face of every warning, have we been unable to act? Why have we not used our resources more wisely and justly? We tell ourselves that social failure gets down to individual moral failure. We must have the will to act. We must first find concern and compassion in our hearts. But this diagnosis is not good enough. It is contradicted by the experience of powerlessness that is encountered by so many people. Today, a majority of the people, as moral individuals, certainly want peace, but they cannot turn their individual wills into action by society. It is not that we do not will action, but that we are unable to act, unable to put existing knowledge to use. The machinery of our society apparently no longer works, or we no longer know how to make it work. The corporate state in which we live is an immensely powerful machine, ordered, legalistic, rational, yet utterly out of human control and indifferent to human values. It is hard to say exactly when our society assumed this shape. The major symptoms of change started appearing after the Second World War, and especially in the 1950s. The expenditure of $1 trillion for defense, the destruction of the environment, the production of unneeded goods, these were not merely extensions of the familiar blunders and corruption of America's past. They were of a different order of magnitude. And although they were all an integral part of a legal and seemingly rational system, they were surrounded by a growing atmosphere of unreality. Yeah. The stupidities and thefts of the Grant era were not insane. They were human departures from a reasonably human standard. In the 1950s, the norm itself, the system itself, became deranged.
Yeah.
These are quotations from an article by Charles A. Reich, whoever that is.
He's the Fourth Reich on the left.
Right, he's the Fourth Reich. In the New Yorker magazine, September 26, 1970, it's an issue before last. It's an article...
Before last what?
The last war.
Yeah. Right.
Called...
Before last Halloween.
The Greening of America and the Reflections section. And it's all about the corporate state and the development of new consciousness. And it's such an overwhelming article. It's got so much
he says a good
clarity
thing.
In it.
Yeah. The thing he says about the fact that our society as a machine doesn't work anymore. In other words, if people still continue to believe that they can express their, for example, will for peace... As a member of a political society, it doesn't work, indeed.
But his point is, you haven't read the whole article, and his point is that is precisely what is lacking from this system.
That's
now.
What I'm
it's
saying.
Not political anymore. It's a bureaucracy.
No, but I'm saying one of the illusions that is still practiced is that there is some way of expressing oneself politically, which is not true, just
right,
what he said.
Right.
There is a way of expressing yourself, which is just by expressing truly yourself, because
right.
then
mm-hmm.
your expression does indeed have a tremendous effect upon people around you. Or
That's
not,
right.
it doesn't matter, but you are your own world.
Well, it does matter, according to him, because that is the revolution. The machine has already, is creating the revolution itself, because the machine is mindless, and in order to operate, the machine has to have the mind of others, and all those people who do not contribute their minds to the operation of the machine and are driven out of the machine by the operation of the machine, because, for instance, the advertising industry has to create disappointment, a feeling of, you know, if you don't have enough sex, if you don't have enough excitement in your life, buy a car, see, which then pollutes the atmosphere and furthermore does not give you the expected sex and excitement
that you
well, I know, Peter, but
you've
your
seen
car
my
is,
car though.
Yes,
right?
lined with fur.
I worked years on it.
I know, and it's got a great pair of bumpers.
Yeah, baby, you've got a cigarette. Why don't you just press the cigarette?
It's wonderful,
right,
but you built it yourself, and there's
right.
the difference. That you see, it wasn't manufactured for you.
No.
And also your car runs on air.
Right.
See, and that is also different. It, unfortunately, it doesn't run on polluted air, and so I know you have to keep it in the garage most
no,
of the time.
No, I run it downhill.
Oh, is that how you
yes,
do it?
Yes, basically downhill. Right.
Well, you're an Indian at heart.
That's very true,
yeah.
Very true.
His car's in Indiana.
That's right.
It's
that's
downhill
where,
all the way to
it stopped
there.
Rolling. It's built in Aspen.
Is it
anyway.
Rolling, Peter?
What? Is it, are we rolling where? Is it rolling, Bob? That was the Indian that built it for me. Go on, what other bad news?
Oh, no, it's not bad news at all. It's especially for people who are looking for some kind of objective or subjective view of what is happening.
Its advice, basically, is
it's
if
advice.
You don't want to be counted, sit down. And,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, I saw that on the back of the bus. John Wayne's face is now on the back end of most of the buses
That's
here.
That's a good place for it.
That's where it belongs, and right there by the... By the exhaust fumes, his mouth is saying, stand up and be counted, vote for, and there's a picture of George Tirebiter, right? In a short-sleeve white shirt and a tie and everything like that. And I was thinking, gee, I mean, like, John's an old man, but this young guy is pinning himself into, like, a death trip, a heavy death trip, right? A stop mm-hmm. trip, stop it all, right?
Well, let's just stop for a minute and say that this is KPFK FM. In Studio City?
No, you're talking
Los
about the corporate,
Angeles.
Talk about FCC. Why do we have to say that? Why do we have to tell them what station it is, for example? I know that's a rule of
so
radio.
People
won't be confused.
They just interrupted what you were talking about, man, so that you could, that's the state's law that you have to do that. That was just what you were reading about. That's just
that
what
I mean?
Happened there.
Mm-hmm,
the state just
right.
stepped in and said, you have to identify this radio station because there can't be no radio stations on the air that aren't identified. Every half hour, you have to say, who the heck you are, baby?
Who the heck you
and
are?
And if it's west of the Mississippi, you got a K
the
in front of it.
The never swears.
That's right.
Well, it says,
It has, there's a whole thing about the FCC.
If it's east what of did the Mississippi, FCC, it has a KKK.
What did the FCC actually do? A large number of channels, this is in television, the most desirable of all, were given to the three giant networks, and this proved a crucial aid to the networks in establishing domination over the entire industry, despite rules seemingly designed to limit chain ownership. Most of the remaining channels were given either to already established powers in the mass communications field, such as newspapers, with the result that the sources of information were further concentrated rather than expanded, or to giant corporations. Moreover, the FCC failed to make any adequate provision for truth, objectivity, or balance in the programs of those to whom it turned over the airwaves. Has anyone ever been able to see a program prepared by the Black Panthers, or migratory workers, or student draft resistors, or New Left economic critics, or women's liberation groups presented on the major networks? Yet at the same time, the law actually forbids any of these unrepresented groups to attempt to broadcast their views without a license. Regulation proceeding strictly according to law thus has the effect of giving a television monopoly to existing power groups in the corporate state and excluding all others, you see.
Well, for example, say you were a Black Panther group or just a group that didn't have a license.
You have to go
How would you go about getting on the radio?
Or you getting have to on come the television. To a station like this station, right?
Yeah, you'd have to change your material.
Right, exactly.
So you'd have to. It'd have to be Black Panther's gals or something like right. that, or the Black Panther beauty contest.
Right on,
brother.
Right on.
Right on here, ladies and gentlemen, wearing a Molotov-proof cocktail dress,
and you know it would have to be something like that from Maverick's flat, the center of the revolution. The Black Panthers girls, bro.
Because it is that anyway, man. I'm sure that anything the Panthers really wanted to get on, I mean, if they really had their way, they'd like to have a little dancing and some girls with it, you know. Just as I suppose the Republicans would when it comes right down to it.
Right.
The thing is, what doesn't let anybody do that? And why did my mic just go out just then?
It's back on.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, the point is, see, as he says, that the selling point of America is freedom, right? America is a free country. It's part of the free world in contrast to the communist world. But what is meant by freedom? He says that imperceptibly, oh, I'm on again, it has come to mean consumer freedom. Consumer freedom is freedom to travel, ski, eat frozen Chinese food, live like a member of the now generation, freedom to buy anything and drive anywhere, you see.
That's freedom. But
that's freedom. Sure, it's freedom.
That's freedom.
Well, like I said, we were talking before the show. I came out tonight, came out of my cave without my identification driver's license, which has my picture on it.
So the car will recognize you.
Right, I guess so. My car started without it.
It did?
Yep. The sensor devices on the police cars evidently didn't pick me up because I got all the way here.
That's right.
And I thought, well, we've always been very proud in this country of the fact that we don't have to carry identification papers like all those Europeans.
Those right. Czechs, Soviets. The border,
we also don't have to carry lead-lined capes the way the French do. And I found myself getting really quite upset and a little frightened that I didn't have my driver's license with me.
It is frightening. I haven't had a driver's
license
for
2 years. That's a very strange state of affairs, man.
That's true.
Yeah? You're under arrest, Peter.
I'm under arrest?
I'm a secret agent. I've been working in this fireside theater of yours, contributing the ideas that the guys down at the force thought up for me.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm special agent Austin, buddy. You're under arrest for not having no driver's license.
I've been watching you for...
Hand me that joint.
I've been watching you for years now, Special Agent Austin.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Special Agent Investigator Burtman.
Uh-oh. You mean... And you're my superior, Sarge.
Well, there are no superiors in the new society, but just temporarily I'm your superior.
I got an idea. Let's arrest these two guys.
Yeah, right.
You can't arrest me. I own the entire place.
No, really?
Yes,
what's your name?
What's my name?
Yeah, I'm sorry
I haven't got a name.
He hasn't got a name.
It's number two.
It's number two,
then
right.
And that leaves...
You can't talk about number two on the radio. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay.
That's right.
This is WXLSV in Charlotte, North Carolina.
No,
how about
no,
that, Jack?
No, no, you mustn't say that.
Okay, this is W60753 in Nova Scotia.
Oh, no, no.
This is the Schnifters. I'm in the Schnifters bathroom.
Oh, see? See what happens? There's people listening all the time.
So the way each individual actually lives is political in the most decisive sense of that word. It is action in one's own life that counts. When enough people have decided to live differently, the political results will follow naturally and easily, and the old political forms will simply be swept away in the flood. Although we seem to be living in the worst of times, it is already possible to visualize the unfolding of a revolution. The new consciousness will spread, and whatever it gives life to, a university, a public school, a factory, a city, and finally the courts, the Congress, and the presidency will become responsive to human needs, even a radio station.
I think about, I can't understand with the cat, though, is that he at least from my point of view, doesn't understand that factories, as a way of life, are in no way can they be changed incrementally or can they be made more responsive to human things. They are the pits.
It seeks to transcend science and technology to restore them to their proper place as tools of man rather than as the determinants of man's existence. It is by no means anti-technological. It does not want to break machines, but it does not want machines to run men. It makes the wholly rational assertion that machines should do the bidding of man who knows and respects his own nature and the natural order of which he is a part. Third, the new consciousness seeks new ways to live in the light of what technology has made both possible and desirable.
But he digs factories. He says, can you imagine a good factory?
He doesn't dig factories. He says, we have factories, and the form that people have used to run these factories has become the kind of thinking that they apply to life.
But the work is a bummer. Working for somebody else is a bummer.
The new consciousness seeks new ways to live. Since machines can produce enough food and shelter for all, why should not man end the antagonism derived from scarcity and base his society on love for his fellow man?
But look at the food you get made by machines. It's bad food. It's not as good as the food that people just organically grow in the earth and relate to. That's what I'm saying. He's a technocrat.
Well,
he's a humanist technocrat.
Perhaps you're right.
I never worried a bit. If Tony missed with a tranquilizer, I could always shoot him with the camera.
<That's right.
laughs> No, go on, son.
Well,
I'm interested in all this.
It's true enough that at this point in our history, there is a distinct conflict between those who feel that we should use the machines and those who feel that we should evade them, that we should eliminate them in our own private lives. And I think that that's, I think that it's an irreconcilable situation.
I don't want to eliminate them. No, I really don't want to. All I'm talking about, and this is the thing that that used to worry me so much at Yale, Phil, was in studying labor economics, which is I've gone into a lot of factories, a lot, 10 or 12, right? And every one that I've been in, right, the means of production, the way things are produced, just the whole atmosphere is one of hell. So that, like, for example, I was talking with Ty Diani today and said, wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody could just, if they wanted to, like, have fancy clothes, paint their clothes the way she's painting them. No factories, no department stores, no people going to work, no matter if it's called the all-humanist department store.
He has a very interesting point in here. Now, wait a minute, David. There's that whole point in here about the clothes, because remember, he says that what is different about the way young people wear clothes today and the way that corporate people wear clothes is very simple. Corporate people still all wear uniforms. They wear suits that are pressed and make them look the same. The only thing that you talk to with a corporate person is his face and his mind. The rest of his body is a machine. It's hidden and it looks the same as every other body. The young people buy mass-produced clothing, but the mass-produced clothing is something which they then paint, add doodads to, or combine in various ways that expresses their own individual personality. And furthermore, he says that the costume of the young person, as it was first expressed in this country, is essentially like what Phil is wearing now, the skirt and the, something like blue jeans or bell bottoms and a work shirt and maybe a dungaree jacket, which
right
is worn all the time for everything that you do.
Right,
you
can sleep in them.
You can sleep in them, you can roll in them, you can walk, you can eat in them, and it also conforms to your body so that you become, your clothes become you and you become of your clothes.
Yes.
The difference being that there's nothing wrong with the mass-produced clothes per se. It's how we use them and the kind of choices that we make in wearing them. And we don't have to wear different clothes to work in than we live in, you see? It's like the guy on television who the disc jockey that we all love so much, sitting there in a suit. Well, you know that one of the joys and advantages of being a disc jockey is that you can sit there in a sports shirt and no pants if you feel like it, but not according to the Columbia School of Broadcasting. You have to look like a machine, you see? And so there's a lie right there.
Yeah.
But it's done because he's presented on TV again, right?
Right.
And over and over and over again. And these are all lies that are becoming increasingly absurd to people who live differently, right? What, Phil?
Well, if we'd had it together, Earl and I would have performed for you our famous Columbia School of Broadcasting shtick, but I'll bet you didn't bring the record, right?
No, we still we need a cartridge machine.
Well, look, let's take advantage of this and say that by the time we'll build up to the famous Columbia School of Broadcasting routine sometime in this series of programs. And now back to our discussion featuring Philip Punter, Doctor of Economology at the University of the New Yorker, and his speech given before the meetings of old guys on the radio. Pete?
We should not forget
that we are a country in which more than half the population is under 25. Most powers is in the hand of people over 25, but how long can them holding it retains it? The persons in the revolutionary movement may grow tired, but time and the force of the machine are on their side. Could somebody get this machine off my side? And for those who's adopting the new values, there is a discovery that there are really no enemies. Nobody wants or needs poverty, inadequate housing, and medical care, or war. There are no people who do not, in the depths of their beings, want the same thing that Consciousness 3 wants. What?
What?
There is no need, then, for any groups in America to fight any other, for they are all fellow sufferers. Businessmen, policemen, construction workers. There is no need even to fight the machine.
For technology can be made the servant of man when consciousness creates a new society. Below, German children learning to swim were crippled before birth when their mothers during pregnancy used the tranquilizer Contergan containing thalidomide. Above, a session of the trial against seven top executives of Kimi Grunenthal, the producer of Contergan. Pier 10 in Brooklyn enjoyed an impromptu circus today, but it was a little overbalanced on the side of aerial acts. But that was not surprising, because most of the actors were birds or monkeys. Fish ridicules Canadian Canal.
Right. I never worried a bit. If Tony missed with the tranquilizer, I could always shoot him with the camera.